you. Let's take our next question from registration number 212. Registration number 212. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, there was an announcement made at NRX last year about true online backup capability in TurboStore. I was wondering if there was any news on that.
Yeah, this is Harvey Skinner again. We have an active investigation going on right now. In fact, we're starting to do some early design review with some of the customers that we've chosen to partner with for our development. So that is still active and going on.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Let's take our next question from registration number 66.
Hello. On the system availability, the cost factor for the mirroring option came up with a cost factor of 1.13.
Okay.
And I know you said it's somewhere between 10 and 15%.
Right.
What are you including in that cost factor that's different from the basic configuration? Is it just the disk units? And are you including maintenance on that, or is there additional costs in that that are identified?
Yeah, what I'm including on that high availability system, I have the online backup. I have auto restart, which is what allows you to do the dump to disk. So those are two things that aren't on the picture that are actually included in that cost. I also have mirrored disk, which includes the mirrored disk software, and it includes the disk mechanism, the redundant disk mechanisms that you would have. It is in a it is in a SCSI configuration that I used when I went to the mirror disk. And I can't remember what your last question was.
Well, the maintenance factor.
Oh, right. I did not include the maintenance factor, but generally our pricing on maintenance, and I'm not an expert on this, but from what I've seen, the pricing scales fairly closely with the purchase price. I don't think that would be out of line, but I could be wrong on that.
Okay, then would it be safe to say that the more disk mechanisms, the lower that cost factor because of the amortization of the software across more mechanisms?
Oh, yes, but it from what when you get that big. When you get that big, you're talking about a much larger system, and I don't think it would change the ratio that much. Even though you have a lot more mechanisms, remember you have to buy all those extra mechanisms, and the software on a very large system that would support that big of a configuration would not be that big of a percentage of the overall cost of the configuration, since you're talking about such a big configuration. So I don't think you'd see that big of a change.
Okay, and then that was my next question. Basically, if we go to a mirroring type of situation, how much does that add in overhead on the system itself? We're running a 967, and we're pushing it fairly well. We've got about 20 gigabytes of hard drive. If I went to mirroring, let's say, about 50% of that disk space, how much of an impact would that have on my processor?
How much are you CPU utilization? That's what the question would be, because it's not going to hurt you in terms of I/O. It would hurt you in terms of CPU utilization. It's fairly negligible, actually. But you would want to have at least 10% to spare if you were going with SCSI mirroring. And what I mean 10% to spare is if you're 90% CPU utilization today, you don't want to add on something else that is going to take CPU horsepower, but if you're I/O bottlenecked, then the disk mirroring is probably going to help you.
Okay, and how about the memory itself, memory utilization?
I don't think you're going to have much of an impact on memory utilization.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Let's take our next question from registration number 181. 181, go ahead.
Yes, this is Jim Pronger in St. Paul. We're looking at the update on 5. I guess my question is, when are we going to get a program so we can change our clocks without bringing our 3000s down when we go to daylight savings or get off? Is that still in the mill?
Yeah, this is Harvey Skinner again. There is a command on NPEIX release 5.0 called set clock that you can do that with. It'll work in a couple different ways. You can set the time either back or forward, and the clock will actually slow down or speed up incrementally until it gets up to that time. so that you don't have any timestamps out of order. Or if you really want to make the change and have it enact right now, you can also do that.
Thank you very much. It's going to be very helpful.
You're welcome. We've heard that from many people.
Thank you. Let's take our next question from registration number 47.
Yes, we have been talking about online backups, and we've been talking about several processes to actually improve system uptime and reliability. But I would like for somebody to talk a little bit about the reliability of data storage to the DDS. We have had in the past several instances where our backups actually appeared to work correctly, but we religiously do validates, and had it not been for validates, we would have not found out that our backups types were not reliable.
This is Harvey Skinner again, real quick. When you're talking about DDS and not reliable, are you talking about the data on the taping incorrect? Or are you talking about the mechanisms not working correctly?
Well, I'm actually talking about the backup tape not being validated correctly, or it would not validate, even though that the backup appeared to function correctly. And this is using TurboStore XL2.
In the validation error, is that a media error, or is it a data error?
Well, it says that it is a media error, but there was no media error, or there was no indication of that during the actual in the standard list or the sys list. Unless we had done a validate, we would have not have known that we had a media error.
Couple things. Let me get your name and number real quick, and I want to call you offline on this too. We've had some problems recently about certain brands of tapes not working well, and so I want to follow up with you and see what you're using out there and try to get some more data on it to help you.
Okay, my name is Larry, and the number is 304-759-4312.
Okay, Larry, thank you.
Thank you. Let's take our next question from registration number 120. 120, go ahead. Registration number 120, do you have a question today?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry. This question is for Scott McClellan. Scott, are you there?
Yes, I am.
My name is Mike Farrell, and I work for a natural gas utility here in Boise, Idaho. And we've done two basically patches or updates to our system, one going from MPE 5 on the Series 70, and then another going from 3.1 on an IX to MPE 4.0. And I guess my question is that the last time we did a power patch update from 3.1 to 4.0, we had a problem with regards to the timing. When you go through the documentation, it's really hard to follow or determine how long it's going to take to do each of the steps. Now, I understand that this is all going to be basically put into one big step, and I can fully appreciate that. But is there any chance that they're going to change the documentation so that we can know how long to expect for restoring and the different parts of the operating system, et cetera?
Yeah, with the enhancements to the process, one of the things that we'll have to take a look at is how all of the steps are documented. And we formed a partnership with the usability process group that does usability reviews on products and manuals. So we have a tight partnership with them. And they're already looking at our manuals, as it turns out, and they've discovered some of these problems. But for all of the new manuals, new processes, there will be new documentation, and you had to be real accurate in accounting for the time. We're hopefully going to be able to do a lot of those steps online with, like, the patch manager, so the timing is more at your leisure rather than real critical time.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Scott.
Does that answer the question?
I think so.
Thank you. Let's take our next question from registration number 35.
Yeah, relating back to that question or the problem with the reliability of DAT drive backups, I've heard that comment several times, if not a dozen or more, and that's the first time I've heard anybody say it might be specific tape brand oriented. I would ask that you publish that somewhere quickly and very prominently so that everyone knows that they may be playing Russian roulette with a gun with six cartridges in it, please.
Okay, this is Harvey Skinner again. Yeah, there are two parts to that question that I was asking about. One was the tape. I'm also going to ask him about the specific DAT device that he has. Some of the older HCIB DATs, I've heard that there were a greater instance of tape sticking in the device and a few things that way than newer DATs. I've never experienced any problem like that. I'm really happy with the newer DATs. Bristol Division does have a list of suggested manufacturers for tapes that I think is available. What would be the best mechanism to get that data out to you, though?
I would recommend maybe the InterExpress from the users group, or you guys publish the periodical update from, I know that Glenn Osaka has the inside front cover article.
The advisor?
That would be another good place to put it.
So the advisor, the monthly newsletter that you get?
Yeah, that would be a good one, because I think everybody gets that. And most people read the InterExpress pretty religiously, that are InterEx members.
Okay.
That's a good point. Another thing is people are trying to use the digital audio tape in some of these things. That does not work well at all. So please check and make sure that you're using real DDS media.
We've been using HP tapes, and we have had a couple of instances. Fortunately, we use a third-party backup product, and we immediately turn around and validate. But we have found a couple, and I've heard a lot of users out there saying, yeah, I had this problem, and I went back and couldn't read the tape. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's take our next question from registration number 42.
Yeah, I have a question with respect to disk mirroring. The first is, if you do have a disk failure when you're using disk mirroring, is it an auto switchover, or do you have to bring the system down and up to take that new drive into effect? And the second part of that is, if it's an automatic switchover, what notification do I have? Our computer, for the most part, lights out that I've even lost a disk drive.
Okay, your first question is, yes, it is completely automatic, and there would be, if you did lose a disk drive of a mirrored pair, that the software would switch it automatically, and there would be no interruption to the end user or the application. The second, in terms of a message, you'll get a message. I can't, off the top of my head, remember the exact message you'll get, but it comes to the console itself. If you have OpenView Console or OpenView System Manager in your lights out environment, the message would be instrumented so that it would pop up on that screen and come through. And if you, in addition to that, if you had the paging facility that goes on top of that from a third party, you could even have that information page your system operator or your system manager at home or wherever they were. But in general, it'll just be a console message.
If I could follow up with that then, if I'm not running the enhanced tools and I miss the console message because it's scrolled off the screen, is there like a command I can type or a status or something that I could do all like every morning and see, oh, one of the drives went out last night?
Yeah, if you get in, again, I'm sorry, I can't remember the exact command, but there is a command set that allows you to view what the status of all of the drives are, and there's various statuses for them. There's online and offline and a couple other statuses. I'd have to go back to the manual to get the exact message, what it would be. But yes, there is a I believe it's in the volume set management utility. I just can't remember exactly what it is, but you can get in and see the status of all those drives.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any additional questions for today? Just press star one. We do have one additional question remaining from registration number 63.
Yes, I have a question in regard to backup options and devices. I'd like to know what the throughput difference between a 7980 XC and the 2000 DC DAC drive. I look at page 19 of your handout, and I see a wildly different transfer rate between BDS and 7980. But yet I have people, another customer not too far from us, that said that he went to the 2000 DC drives, his backup time was cut in half. I don't understand this. Can you explain, please? I also have a follow-up.
Yeah, one thing on that slide, the 7980 was not labeled completely. That's a 7980SX. It's the SCSI data compressing version of the device. So that should take care of part of that difference there.
Is there still that much of a difference between an HPIB 7980XC and the 2000DC?
Between the SCSI and the SCSI 7980 device and the DAT device?
No, I'm sorry. Between the HPIB 7980XC and the SCSI 2000DC DAT drive.
I don't have that number with me. I think the SCSI almost doubled the speed. But I'd have to go back and check to make sure. But it did increase the throughput overall.
I'd love to know that difference, because that does not seem to be documented anywhere.
Okay, can I get your name and number?
Yes, my name is John Alexander, and my number is 608-757-4653. I also have a follow-up question, and that would be, what really difference is there between hardware compression and the software compression on TurboStar?
In terms of what? In terms of software compression, we have two different levels. We have the 2-to-1 ratio. Being low compression, we have the approximately 3.5-to-1 ratio, being the high compression available in TurboStore. Hardware device compression is about a 3.5-to-1 ratio also. So it is roughly equivalent with the high compression in TurboStore. The main difference you'd want to go one versus the other is whether you have available CPU overhead to do the software compression or not.
So, in other words, if you're using your CPU heavily, you want to use hardware compression, but if you're not using your CPU heavily, you want to use software compression?
Yeah, if you do have the CPU available to do the software compression, then you're going to get better overall I/O throughput performance because we're sending less data over the channel. If you don't have the CPU overhead available to do software compression, then I put hardware compression devices on there so that the device takes care of the compression.
Does that include the DAT drives, for instance, and their hardware compression? Is it still a better deal to have software compression running than hardware?
It depends on what you have available within your environment, really. If you have a lot of other shops that you're transferring data with that also have hardware compression drives, it's probably not that big of a problem for data transfer. If the other shops that you share data with only have non-compressing drives, then I'd use software compression.
Yeah, that's really not an issue. I've got 79 for that. I'll look forward to your call. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Evans, we do have two additional questions remaining. Do we have time to take those?
Two more, then we'll cut them off.
All right, very good. We'll take our next question for registration number 35.
One quick comment. The gentleman who was wanting to know how to get his status, whether or not one of his mirror drives had gone offline, I would direct him to the NRX Contributed Library in Alfred, which will let you look at all the console messages, go back and read your system log files and look at them. I have a question also. If I were using disk mirroring on two systems, wouldn't I be able to effectively perform online backups by suspending the mirroring to system B, do my backup on system B, while people continue to use system A for transactions, and then just turn mirroring back on? How long will it buffer up those disk IOs before it overflows a buffer or effectively won't work anymore?
I need to clarify your question a little bit. You said disk mirroring between two systems, and maybe I'm getting hung up on terminology, but disk mirroring can only be work on one system that has, you mirror drives on one system, where shadowing is where you shadow from one system to a second system.
I stand corrected. My bad terminology.
Okay. So is your question related to the shadowing?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. If you're shadowing from one system to another, you can stop the posting, if you will, too, that is going on to the network, and it will batch that up as long as you have the disk space to batch on that buffer file, and that buffer file dynamically expands as long as there is, as long as you've got disk space there. So it'll go quite a long time. And then, like you said, when you're done with your backup on your secondary system, you can start the posting again, and it'll go back over the network and post all of those updates that you had in your buffer.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Let's take our last question from registration number 106.
Yes, I got a couple, three questions, really. They talked about validation. Did they use the product vStore?
This is Harvey Skinner. I don't remember what he said he did. vStore is available to everyone out there. With Store, you just type in the vStore command.
Yeah, we run that here, and I just wonder if there's anything else that they were using that was out there.
Yeah, I'll check with him when I call him on that. The other thing that I wish I'd said earlier is one problem we have run across with the DATS is that it is a device where the heads are not readily seen on the device, so people tend to forget that they need cleaning also, just like their other tape drives.
That's true.
One of the issues we've seen is people don't clean them as often as they really need to.
Yeah, we clean ours twice a week. So, another question on this Advisor publication. I guess of all HP data I get like that, I have never seen that.
Okay, what you can do is we have an 800 number, 1-800-224-HP3K, and specifically you can call and leave your name and address to be added to the distribution list.
Okay.
We can update our database daily.
Thank you. I was just kind of interested in that $30,000 per hour downtime cost. Did you use a pretty sizable company on that?
Oh, when I was... That was a number that I chose just based on customers that we had, and also a publication, I can't recall the name of right now, that had done a study, and they had estimated $75,000 per hour. So that's why I had tried to bring that number down to more of a mid-sized company, so it wasn't that large. So I actually tried to make that a smaller number.
Did they figure in loss of business then to get it up in that range?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude the question and answer session today. I'll turn it back over to Brenda Hess and Carl Evans for any closing comments.
All right. Well, I'd just like to thank everybody once again for tuning in this time, and sign up for next month, and it's actually going to be a live videotape, so you now can see faces associated with the voices. So feel free to call the 800 number again and see what next month's videotape will be all about. And thanks again.